It's Wednesday, December 31st, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hello there, Stashers. Can you believe it's the last day of 2008? Boy, it seems like just yesterday we were looking at Hillary Clinton and Rudolph Giuliani running for president and all sorts of things that we hadn't yet anticipated for 2008. Most appreciatively, the passage of medical marijuana in Michigan and decriminalization in Massachusetts. We're looking forward to 2009 and all sorts of great new reforms in marijuana law and all the great events that are going to be taking place in 2009. We'll bring them to you here in photos, video, and audio at the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now, I'm a little bit exhausted today because I spent this morning from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Portland time guest hosting on the Bill Press Show, which is a progressive talk radio show that airs in the morning markets in many of the largest cities in America, Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., etc. And for today's audio stash, I thought I'd do a little something different and give you a glimpse of my life as a political talk radio host. So I'm going to be playing a clip from the show today where I schooled Bill's audience on the change.gov questions and how Barack Obama is waffling a little bit and ignoring the cries of the people to do something about this stupid war on drugs. And of course, as promised, I've got the top 10 Reefer Madness headlines. You can vote on your favorites up at stash.normal.org. I've set up a post that I'm calling the 2008 Stashy Awards, and you can vote not only on the top 10 Reefer Madness headlines, but also the top 10 Stupid Stoner Stories, the top 10 Stoner Movies, and the top 10 Podsafe Music Tunes from the Daily Audio Stash in 2008. Finally, we've got our cannabis science segment, our final interview of the year with our great friend, Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the State University of New York at Albany. Remember, tonight you actually get an extra second to party. Scientists are adding a leap second to our clocks to make up for inaccuracies in the Earth's rotation. So that's one extra second that you can enjoy your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now, now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Well, Stashers, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I'm pretty wiped out today from guest hosting the Bill Press Show from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. here in Portland. So I'm going to play this clip for you to get you a little look at my life as a political talk radio host. We're just going to jump right into the middle of a segment where I'm talking about President-elect Barack Obama and his inclusion of Pastor Rick Warren to deliver the invocation at Barack Obama's inauguration on January 20th. This discussion led to me talking about, in general, Barack Obama's commitment to progressive political principles, and that leads me to this segment where we discuss the legalization of marijuana. I'm starting to hear all sorts of talk lately about let's let bygones be bygones with regard to the George W. Bush administration. Let's not investigate the torture. Let's not go after all these criminals that trashed our Constitution and our rights. Let's let bygones be bygones because, you know, that's the perfect way to ensure it'll never happen again. You know, it worked with all those Nixon criminals, right? Worked with all those Iran-Contra criminals. No, it didn't. They ended up back in the George W. Bush administration to wreak more havoc on this country and steal more money out of our treasury. It's time to hold these people accountable. Also, one other thing we saw Barack Obama a little bit fudging on here is his commitment to get out of Iraq within 16 months. You know, stood strong by that. We're going to get out of Iraq in 16 months, but now we're starting to hear a little bit of waffling on that. So I'm wondering, are we going to get the change we can believe in, or is it just more of the same triangulation? I got more thoughts about that coming up in our next segment. I want to talk a little bit about you folks out there and the questions you've been asking at Barack Obama's change.gov website. This is the Bill Press Show. I'm Radical Russ, filling in for Bill Press. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
You're listening to the official morning show of the Obama inauguration. This is the Bill Press Show. From pop culture to politics. Oh, yeah. All that other crap in between. This is the Bill Press Show.
Welcome back to the show. It's a quarter till. I'm Radical Russ Belville, filling in for Bill Press. Check me out at RadicalRuss.com. Get more information on the Russ Belville Show every Saturday, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Yeah, coming back on this this talk about the upcoming Obama inauguration, I don't want anyone to get me wrong that I'm not really looking forward to this. Compared to what I'm complaining about, the good we're going to get out of the new Obama administration far exceeds it. I think we're going to have to kind of recalibrate our sensors after, you know, 8 years of Bush fatigue here to really get a handle on what we're complaining about, because the stuff I'm talking about, while important, you know, isn't the most crushing aspects of what we're facing with our economy meltdown and the Middle East inflamed and so on. But they're still important nonetheless. So let me get back to this for just a second. I was talking a little bit about how I felt the Obama administration and Barack Obama are taking the left-wing base for granted and really throwing us under the bus on a lot of issues. And I want to get to your concerns here. And we are taking your calls coming up in the next segment at 866-55-PRESS. That's 866-55-77-377. And one great thing about the Obama administration has been its embrace of the internet and collaborative networking technologies here, particularly his website, change.gov. Now, at the change.gov website, the transition team put up a feature called Open for Questions. And what it did is it allowed people to submit their own questions of the Obama administration. They processed about 600,000 votes. They got about 10,000 people on the website asking about 7,000 different questions. And with all these hundreds of thousands of votes from thousands of people on thousands of questions, the number one question that appeared on change.gov was, Will you consider legalizing marijuana so the government can regulate it, tax it, put age limits on it, and create millions of new jobs and create a billion-dollar industry right here in the U.S.? So, you know, terrorism, war, tainted Chinese toys, the economy melting down, the torture crimes of the Bush administration, none of that outranked the legalization of marijuana as a question. And so I was really interested in finding out how Obama would answer this, considering his past.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
So it was the number one question, but not only that, not only was marijuana legalization the number one question, but questions on the drug war, and drug law reform were not only number one question, but two of the top 10 questions, six of the top 20 questions, 16 of the top 50 questions, and 31 of the top 100 questions had to do with ending this stupid war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. 31% of the top 100, a plurality over any other subject asked. So, Barack Obama promised he would listen to the people. He promised he would have open dialogue. He promised...
Because the truth is that promoting science isn't just about providing resources. It's about protecting free and open inquiry.
So with that notion in mind of embracing science and free and open inquiry, what answer did the over 10,000 people who submitted these questions, what did they get on legalizing marijuana? What nuanced and introspective response did we get? 11 words. President-elect Obama is not in favor of the legalization of marijuana. That's it. No why, no wherefore, no talk about medical marijuana, no suggestions of decriminalization, no addressing the idea of age limits or creating jobs or taxing and getting billions of dollars. None of that, just not in favor of legalization. Now, there were four other questions they pulled up to answer. They pulled up a question on stem cell research. That question got 118-word answer in response. They pulled up a question on promoting science and mathematics to elementary and middle school students. That question got a 79-word response. We got a question on restoring constitutional checks and balances. Got a 71-word response on that. So he felt quite good about answering to some extent these other questions, but the number one question, he couldn't even be bothered to ask to answer it. Now, Perhaps it's a good thing, the answer he gave, because at least he didn't try to defend the war on drugs or the war on marijuana with any of these silly reefer madness statistics that the drug czar is always pulling up. But still, it's quite disappointing to have a candidate who promised he'd listen to the people and follow the science completely ignoring the elephant in the room about this stupid war on drugs. With the economy crashing the way it is, we can't afford the prohibition of marijuana anymore. The prohibition of marijuana, if it were lifted, would save about $7 billion worth of state and federal resources and would earn another $7 billion worth of taxes if it were taxed and regulated like alcohol. That's $14 billion every year, or, for comparison's sake, about the cost of what we plan to bail out the big three auto companies. I'm Radical Russ. We got to take a short break. We'll be right back with one more segment and your calls at 866-55-PRESS. That's 866-55-77-377. This is the Bill Press Show.
You have offended my family. You have offended a Shaolin temple.
This is the Bill Press Show. Broadcasting live from the capital of the free world, this is the Bill Press Show.
Wow, I didn't realize Portland, Oregon was now the capital of the free world. I'm Radical Russ Belville, filling in for Bill Press here up in Portland, Oregon. So, congratulations, Portland. We were talking earlier about...
Been promoted!
That's right, we've been promoted. Rose City to capital of the free world. We were talking earlier about the Barack Obama inauguration and whether or not Barack Obama's got a solid commitment to the left wing, to progressive values. And I noted a few examples. I was talking about the drug war a second ago. The change.gov website, open for questions, is reopened again, open for round two for the rest of today. You can still go out there and vote. They've balanced the questions now a little bit by category, and currently in the additional issues category, the number one question has to do with gay and lesbian rights and protecting the rights of married gay and lesbian people. But the number two question is about decriminalizing marijuana, and the number three question is about the drug war. Furthermore, when you look over in the national security section of the website, the number two question is once again about the drug war. So it's time that Barack Obama starts to recognize that the people out here are way ahead of the politicians, and they want to talk about a rational end to the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
The top 10 Reefer Madness stories of 2008. Here they are, culled from all the crazy misinformation and outright lies spouted by media and government regarding cannabis, our top 10 Reefer Madness stories of 2008. It was tough to cut it down to only 10, so I concentrated on presenting the craziest story in each subject. For example, only one of those not-your-father's-Woodstock-weed story out of the possible dozens. Here we go, with deference to Dave Letterman, the top 10 Reefer Madness stories of 2008. Number 10.
Cannabis on sale in Ireland, now 8 times stronger.
Yes, this is one of those many pot 2.0, or in the UK, skunk scare stories out there, which have estimated the THC potency of cannabis to be anywhere from 8 to 400 times more potent than the grass of the 60s. Even the European governments say potency has remained stable at about 6 to 8%, and their U.S. counterparts say it's doubled from about 4.5% to 9.6%. Nobody ever seems to address why 100% potent synthetic THC pills are legal, though. Number 9.
Lithium may help kick marijuana habit.
Australian researchers noted that giving so-called pot addicts the heavy psychotropic drug lithium, usually used for severe bipolar disorder, helped the marijuana users to quit using marijuana. I noted that when lithium gives you the side effects of nausea, vomiting, trembling, twitching, loss of appetite, or headache, at least you could treat that with medical marijuana. Number 8.
Cannabis drove UK mother insane and to suicide.
The actual headline is, cannabis-smoking mum stabbed herself to death, and it's about a psychotic woman who's been actively suicidal since age 14, and hears the voice of her dog commanding her. The weeks before she stabbed herself repeatedly in the chest with a 5-inch knife, she had slashed her wrists and hung a noose in the attic. What you don't learn until you read deeper into the article is that the woman was also a daily speed freak. Number 7.
Heavy marijuana use shrinks brain parts.
Well, like I said at normal conference, at least it doesn't shrink any other parts. Again, those Australians, this time they found that 15 blokes who had smoked 5 or more joints a day for 20 years had slightly smaller amygdala and hippocampus volume in the brain than non-smokers. They never consider that perhaps the 15 blokes who had smaller brain parts were self-medicating to deal with this deficit, which they claimed leads to poor memory, mild psychosis, and paranoia. Number 6.
Marijuana in Malala, return of the gateway drug.
This isn't so much a story as it is a visual of a billboard nearby Portland, Oregon, paid for by your tax dollars, that shows a marijuana smoker picture on one side and a pockmarked meth addict face on the right side, and in between in bold red letters,
"Marijuana, a gateway drug to meth."
Number 5.
Florida representative proposes bong tax.
Representative Rosson of Florida just slipped in yesterday to nab the number 5 spot with his ridiculous idea to add a sin tax to drug paraphernalia, which Florida law defines so loosely as to not only include bongs and pipes, but alligator clips, 2-liter soda bottles, and duct tape. Roussan then gets loonier by suggesting he'd amend the bill to only tax the drug uses of duct tape,
not legitimate handiworkers. How exactly? By length of hair? Number 4.
Oral sex and marijuana use linked to throat cancer.
Where does one sign up for these kind of studies? This was a study that explored the human papillomavirus, or HPV, and found that those who used more marijuana and had more oral sex partners had more cases of HPV. This may explain why President Bill Clinton never inhaled. I guess the moral to this story is that if you're gonna smoke a lot, stick to one or the other. Number 3.
Senator Tom Harkin. Marijuana makes people sell their children.
A normal member wrote to Iowa Senator Tom Harkin and asked about marijuana legalization. Harkin's reply included such laughers as, quote,
"Marijuana is often the drug singled out for legalization. However, marijuana is not the recreational drug that many believe it to be. The victims of the drug war are many. The small child whose parents are so addicted to illegal drugs that they sell everything, including perhaps their own children, to obtain a fix."
End quote. Number 2.
Black girls using marijuana prone to riskier sex, higher STD rates.
See, for white girls, it's wine coolers and a Girls Gone Wild cameraman. This study found that young African-American women who take the risk of using marijuana also seem to take the risk of having sex. They make no effort to address other factors that might lead to higher STD rates, like less health insurance or healthcare access or health education. And they also find no difference in condom usage, so it seems obvious something else is at play here. And the number 1 top 10 Reefer Madness story of 2008 is...
Stoners in the Mist. More prejudiced propaganda from the ONDCP.
While it didn't debut in 2008, I first discovered it and covered it in 2008. So it's my list and it's on it. This is more shocking waste of taxpayer dollars and a grossly disturbing, deeply offensive bit of drug czar propaganda that casts so-called stoners as wild game to be tracked in their habitat by a pith helmet-wearing Marlon Perkins wannabe and a tracking collar-wielding assistant. Various segments spread lies and distortions about cannabis users while continually degrading us as filthy, dangerous, inhuman beasts that should be rounded up like vermin and subject to experiments. A new low, even by Reefer Madness standards. And that's it. Your top 10 Reefer Madness stories of 2008. Make sure to check out stash.normal.org, where you can vote for your favorites. Hey there, Stashers. How would you like to win a 6-night trip to the most cannabis-friendly spot on Earth? That's right, a trip to Amsterdam for 4, sponsored by the Normal Foundation. It's an exciting new fundraiser for our organization, partnering with Win for Charity to help us raise money so we can provide programs and services to normal members like you. Win for Charity is an online hosting solution for charitable organizations that allows us to harness the power of the internet to increase our fundraising ability. How do you win? Simple. Just go to www.winforcharity.com/normal. That's win, the number 4, charity.com/NORML. Click your buy ticket now button, then just select normal as your charity. The vacation package includes 6 nights in an Amsterdam city hotel, including breakfast, entrance to the Rijksmuseum, and a canal bus day pass, round-trip airfare, private transfers from airport to hotel and hotel to airport, a full-day tour to Delft, The Hague, and Madurodam, and a full-day tour to the Windmills and Volendam. Get your tickets now at winforcharity.com/normal. Your ticket helps to support our organization, and you could win 6 nights in Amsterdam.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, I wasn't sure what song I was going to play for the last song of 2008, and then I got a couple of comments up on the Stash blog that pretty much made my mind up for me. Tom D. said that it was a fantastic selection, but there was a couple of honorable mentions that didn't make the list that he wanted to mention, including Mountain Kind from MC Frontalot and High by Sly Joe. But he also added Get Stoned Together, the song that I put up from my brother, Josh Belleville. And following that comment, Wayne says, I agree, your brother should be on there. That song's great. Well, okay, I was a little hesitant to put Josh's song on there because I didn't want it to reek of favoritism if I put my own brother in the top 10, but hey, I'm always willing to play requests. This is my brother, Joshua Belleville. You can find out more of his music at zornog.net. That's ZORNOG.net. He's got a whole bunch of albums and songs out there for download. This is my brother, Josh Belleville, and the song Get Stoned Together.
This will sound crazy, baby, but I can't stop. it last through the night. You know I like to do it right. You and me, let's get stoned together. Whatever you feel, I might make it better.
President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check norml.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid? And which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
Well, it's time for some cannabis science, and this is going to be the final cannabis science of 2008. It's a New Year's Eve, and we're joined again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be on.
I'm not going to talk to you again until 2009.
Hard to believe.
I know. It's amazing. We've come to the end of the year here. And as I was putting some posts together for this week's Daily Audio Stash, I found one that I thought would be the perfect one to run by you because this is a post that came off of CNN from their health website, or part of their website dealing with health, I imagine. And it's a daily question that people can ask of a doctor there on CNN, I guess, and they can get, you know, health responses here. And this was the question for today that was asked by a person named Pat in Kansas. And the title of it here was, "Will daily pot usage hurt my health?" And he continues to ask, "I don't smoke cigarettes or drink alcohol, but I have smoked marijuana daily for the last 25 years. Although I've enjoyed good health all my life, I would like to know what concerns I should have with long-term marijuana usage." And since you've done a lot of the studies on this, I thought we would get your opinions. For someone who is close to a daily cannabis user, what kind of long-term health effects should they be looking at?
Well, it's interesting because the primary negative consequence we have, of course, is the legal one. So if you're buying large amounts and getting high every single day, the thing to watch out for, of course, is who is your dealer, what kind of quantities do you buy in, and what would the legal consequences be if you did happen to run into somebody in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I have to be honest that all the health consequences pale in comparison when you think about some of the negative things associated with not a misdemeanor, but, a felony possession charge, where in a lot of states that could be just over an ounce. So, just watch how much you have on hand and be careful where you're getting it. As far as health consequences are concerned, long-term, we're seeing some respiratory problems, but not lung cancer, despite what this physician on CNN seems to think. The long-term data do not show increased rates in lung cancer in even daily users in a large study done by Donald Tashkin out in Los Angeles. And it's just not the issue. There is some wheezing and coughing and maybe tightness in the chest that people report in a data set of mine and from other researchers. And the bottom line on this is my usual vaporizer recommendation, mm-hmm. that if you can turn to a vaporizer, by all means, you're going to see a drop in some of these. And a paper of mine, one by Don Abrams, and a couple other publications suggest that really the vaporizer would be the way to sidestep any of these respiratory negative consequences.
Sure.
It's worded in kind of an alarmist way on CNN, but there are some subtle changes in brain function with daily use once you're over about 2 years. And I assume Pat meant, daily, really every single day, not just a couple times a week. And what we do see is just when people are doing really difficult, complicated tasks and have to respond quickly, their brain waves seem to go in a different direction, if you will, than the brain waves of folks who aren't regular cannabis users. But we're talking about a pretty subtle effect here, so I can't make a real big deal out of that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, just as we're all getting older, baby boomers among us, is some concern about cardiovascular problems. And cannabis does increase heart rate. And there was at least one case of somebody who happened to have a heart attack relatively soon after using cannabis, and they thought maybe the heart rate increase had contributed to that. Unfortunately, from a single case, we just can't really tell. We're not getting tons and tons of evidence about coronary problems in long-term users, particularly those who don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And that was the issue that I thought was neat in the question, is that this person mentions Pat, I guess it's a he or a she, mm-hmm. doesn't use cigarettes. And I think that's a wonderful step toward making sure coronary heart disease is not going to be at risk. When we do see sort of things that are closely linked to heart problems, it's often in folks who are smoking dramatically larger amounts than most folks use. One of the studies you mentioned on your blog is an 11 joints a day or more.
Yeah.
clearly, these are folks who are smoking a lot more pot than your average daily user.
Yeah. I often, when I hear these kind of things and I'm just talking to regular folks, I don't want to get too far into, numbers and studies and science and all that. And if I just want to give them a common sense answer, two things I always say is, number one, inhaling smoke is never good. Smoke of any kind is not necessarily a healthy thing for your lungs. But on the other hand, have you met like older Rastafarians and older hippies? I mean, I would think if there was a severe long-term effect to daily cannabis smoking, we'd see that in some of these heavy cannabis smoking populations, wouldn't you say?
And in fact, it's hard to get those guys to even bother coming into the lab. They don't see any problem. And, I never want to argue from individual cases, but, you look around the NARML conference and some of our seniors are there, and they're clearly still having a good time without a lot of health troubles.
Yeah.
The other issue that came up in this CNN report was just the issue of dependence. And
yeah.
Again, I view this as kind of laughable, but there is an established marijuana withdrawal syndrome. And now, if obviously somebody who smoked every day for 25 years probably doesn't know if he or she would have withdrawal without the cannabis. But the impact of it is really not like our stereotypes of, say, heroin or alcohol or the stimulant drugs. What we do get is, folks who happen to be in the hospital who report cannabis as their drug of choice report some irritability, strange dreams when they sleep, and what a surprise, loss of appetite, as if that is, this big serious withdrawal syndrome. And, as you mentioned, compared to some of the the other drugs that are out there, this is pretty minor when you think about what true dependence really means.
Yeah, and there was a few other things that the doctor, by the way, was Dr. Jennifer Hsu from the Children's Medical Group. She's a pediatrician, which right off the bat, I kind of thought that was a little strange to have a pediatrician given, you know, adult and what I guess would be geriatric advice by the time it became long-term, you know, we're talking into your 70s or so. I thought that was odd that she was the one answering, but she mentioned some other things here that I'd like to get your opinion on here. You know, she mentions this THC working on the receptors of the brain and causing hallucinations, learning and memory problems, and how this would be and there was something else about long-term cannabis smokers functioning at a lower intellectual level, and I was just wondering about that.
I think she may have a couple of different studies confused on this. Now, during intoxication, of course,
Yeah. It's
really hard to learn new material. I'm not saying it's impossible, but if somebody just said, here's a list of 15 words and you're high, go ahead and learn them, it would be a struggle compared to your performance when you weren't high. The lower intellectual functioning, I'm wondering if she might be referring to good old Peter Fried's data on folks who started using heavy early in life having these small but statistically significant drops in IQ. And I'm always a little suspicious of those because these are the guys who are pretty much getting high every day, and I can't help but wonder if when they come in to take the IQ test, they aren't high as well. Mm. So is it really a chronic effect, or is this really just an acute reaction to cannabis? So I don't want to make too much of that. Obviously, if you feel like, you know, your memory's not going the way you'd like it to go, or you're not at your mental peak, take a few weeks off and enjoy it. And what a surprise, some of your sensitivity will come back, and it could save your pot bill down the line. So, you know, I'm certainly a big fan of, you know, not having to use every day and taking time off. But I feel like the way this is worded, it makes it sound like even in the unintoxicated state, there's some kind of learning deficit.
Right. That's what I was getting at, too, is the way she had constructed the sentence there. You know, at the beginning, she says, in the short term, lower doses can cause feelings of relaxation and sensual distortion. And then she uses a whereas here to talk about what happens under the higher doses. And it kind of shifts the idea that maybe that's a permanent thing rather than just while you're intoxicated. And no one here is trying to argue that there's not mental effects while you're intoxicated.
Exactly. Igor Grant had a great review of all the studies of folks who weren't high at the time, supposedly, and found really small things in learning and memory. And then my student, Allison Luby, has just shown that some of this may come from really sort of stereotypes about cannabis and how people react to being in the lab if they feel like the lab is kind of an anti-cannabis place.
Sure.
So you can imagine if you come in and it looks like it's mellow and there are, you know, Bob Marley posters on the wall, you might be completely comfortable doing your best. Whereas if you're coming in and everybody's in a white coat and they're, you know, treating you like dirt because you're the cannabis user,
yeah,
then, you know, what a surprise. You don't sort the cards quite as quickly or remember all the crazy paired words.
Do researchers consider that and try to factor out the prohibition of cannabis being a psychological or mental effect on people?
It's intriguing because particularly with the stereotype about paranoid reactions, we're trying to get some data comparing, say, the Netherlands and the U.S. on that. And it's hard, you know, because you're translating and it's different countries and things like that. But generally we see, particularly with some of these more subtle neuropsychological and mental tasks, that people just don't do as well in an environment that's generally hostile anyway. So a colleague of mine who does things on women in the menstrual cycle and their mental functioning across the mental cycle, it's kind of a sexist lab. It's all these butch guys, you know, treating these women crazy. And what a surprise, they don't do particularly well.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of those stereotypes may generalize under these circumstances. And in fact, as soon as we got that paper published, I think we should, give a good podcast talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. So bottom line, as we're looking at the long-term effects of regular cannabis use, whether it's daily or weekly, let's say, could we say there's no real effect on longevity or good health in the long term, or is that going too far?
So, well, we don't have the longevity data either way, so
okay.
It's just not there. As far as dependence, well, yeah, if you're using every day, that's consistent with dependence. I'm not sure, you know, how horrible that really is. And then these respiratory irritations are very real, so, you know, by all means, using the vaporizer will help. And again, we don't have data on the cardiovascular stuff, but obviously obviously folks who are, you know, engaging in other good cardiovascular health behaviors, particularly, you know, keeping their cholesterol down, exercising regularly, you know, that sort of thing. We, again, don't have a lot of data. If you've had, you know, some kind of cardiac failure in the past, well, then by all means, don't do this. But
right.
I'm afraid, you know, the list of other drugs, including caffeine and everything else you shouldn't go near, is also pretty expensive.
Well, that's the thing I was thinking of, too, is if you're going to compare the regular use of cannabis to the regular use of anything, and, you know, it goes without saying tobacco or alcohol, but even things like aspirin or caffeine can have long-term health effects that are pretty bad.
You got it. And it's funny because I just read a paper saying, you know, if everybody would quit caffeine, the rate of stroke would drop by 15%.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of a scary thought for me. And, you know, maybe we should contemplate what are the things that have genuine negative health consequences and consider changes in our behavior. But this just doesn't seem like a high priority one. And unfortunately, we just don't have the data. And as we follow people along, we'll get to know better. But right now, this remains, as judges have said in the past, one of the safest substances around.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Earlywine, thanks for giving us the straight dope, we could say, on the cannabis science here. Because when we see those things in CNN, that gets a lot of play. And I think a lot of people react to that, and it's just good to know the real science behind it. Like the doctor mentioned, I've got a post on this that appeared on Monday's Stash with a lot of hyperlinks to some of these studies, so check it out for yourself. Don't take our word for it. It's all right there in black and white from very established peer review research. And again, Mitch, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with an observation that at midnight we will be celebrating the 10th anniversary of 1999. Remember Y2K? Well, dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word life, that means forever, and that's a mighty long time, but I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun, day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know, the one, Dr. Everything Feel All Right, instead of asking him how much of your time is left, ask him how much of your mind. Because in this life, things are much harder than the afterworld. In this life, you're on your own. And then the elevator tries to break you down. Let's go crazy, everybody, for 2009. Happy New Year, Stashers. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. And until next year, take care of each other, Tokers.